It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running for this seventh day of August 2019. We're a full week into August. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's your one-stop shop for just about every podcasting platform imaginable, thanks to Brother Deacon Asa. And also, you'll find there access to the chat room. And if you pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in, well, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Dowhead and Squeaky and more to come as the program gets well and truly underway. And you'll be capably, well, no, you'll be moderated by me. And, well, whatever. So, that. Also, and see, there's Otto the Shot jumping in to the conversation this evening. Good. Hi, gang. Dowhead, Otto, Squeaky. Thanks for being there early. And here comes Jimmy from the Great Northwest. Hey, Jimmy. Also at HeadOn.live, in addition to the podcast and the chat room, you'll see my Twitter feed. That's there, too, if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. What else? The way that we keep the program on the air. As most folks know by now, this is going to be a disastrous August. I still don't have any answers, but I know, you know what happened. I know what happened. We know why it happened. So, I have tremendous thanks to an anonymous member of the community who has stepped up to help out with, you know, like a down payment. Thank you. As far as just the ordinary fundraising for the program is concerned, well, we're at $580 at midweek. So that's where that stands. But every program does begin with gratitude. And toward that end, thanks go out to James and to Dr. Allen down in Texas and to Reed and to Brock. Thank you all very, very kindly. Those are our subscribers for the seventh day of the month. If you'd like to be a subscriber, run on over to HeadOn.live and click on PayPal and or Patreon and become a subscriber there. And be part of I guess we're close to or at the happy 100 and working toward the terrific 200. Nowhere near that, though. I mean, not even in the same area code, probably not the same continent with that. But that's where we stand. And this, of course, is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And, well, the deacons had two Wednesdays off. I'm hoping they're not completely useless. But I'd like to get started because her words are so moving. I'd like to get started with a note from Lady B. This is America. This is how we think. Seems like I haven't been paying much attention. That's not true. I have been paying attention. I just don't care anymore. How can you not just hang your head in defeat? How can you articulate these feelings into words? I'll start by stating the facts I know. Last weekend, a white gunman goes into a Texas Walmart, predominantly frequented by Mexicans, and starts shooting as many people as he possibly could. He killed 22, he wounded 24 more, then he's able to walk out and peaceably surrender to the police. Meanwhile, white cops on horseback are filmed leading a black man by a rope to jail. We don't know what he did, but nobody said he'd killed anyone. So, what the fuck? Why couldn't they just hold him in place until a police cruiser could take him away? Wouldn't that at least be a little less dehumanizing? I've seen the image that Lady B describes. In fact, Sandra pointed it out to me on Twitter the other day. It looks like something out of the 1850s. It looks like something out of the age before the internal combustion engine or radios. You got a guy, you've got him in custody. You call for a roller. And you take the individual off to jail. Oh, but not these intrepid horseback cavalry policemen. No. They put a rope on the African American man and pulled him along, forcing him to walk behind the horses. Now, that's racist as fuck. But we can also add into the mix the fact that it is a risk manager's nightmare. Whoever writes the policy, whoever underwrites the insurance policy for that particular city, and it was Arizona, wasn't it? Or in Arizona. Whoever writes the policy for that particular city is probably, I mean, even with limited immunity for cops from a legal standpoint, you're insured as the city. And one of those things that horses do is kick. One kick and that man's dead. Or at least badly maimed. And it's a horse. There's no guarantee that it won't. Did that enter into the police thinking, if we can use that word? Hard to imagine that it did. Yeah. So, I don't have a good answer to Lady B's question. Why couldn't they just hold him in place until a police cruiser could take him away? Why wouldn't you call for a roller? 3 years ago, Lady B continues, a white guy shoots up a black church, killing 9 people. On his way to jail, the police cruiser stops at Burger King because it would violate his rights to hold him overnight, knowing that the cafeteria had closed for the evening. Poor little thing might starve. He killed 9 black people who had welcomed him into their church with open arms. He deserves a meal, yet a black man is led down the street by a rope because the mounted police don't think him worthy enough to wait for a police cruiser? White authorities treat suspected criminal minorities worse than they do suspected criminal whites. Justice is not equal, and it is not fair. And to think, all my life I've prayed to an image of a white Jesus. Shaking my damn head. The problem with American policing is how our society perceives things that are considered good and bad. The cops who led the black man down the street on a rope didn't think what they were doing was racist. Well, that's probably because they have no conception whatsoever of history. And I'm sorry, I'm editorializing in medias res with what Lady B said. But it reminded me of something I was made aware of in the course of a conversation with my granddaughter. We were talking the other day. And I asked her about the classes she liked and the classes she didn't. You know, the boring crap that grandparents ask. And she's going into 7th grade. That's a big deal. Kind of blows my mind. Grandson, others, is going into 6th. And My other grandson is going into fourth. But I said, so what do you like? And she told me how she likes math and science, and that'll make all the STEM people out there happy. She said she's fond of English, but she doesn't like social studies at all. I said, what are social studies, and why don't you like them? And she said, oh, you know, where you have to learn about all those battles and when they happened and who fought them. I said, oh, history. She said, I guess, but they just call it social studies. Gotta wonder how old Thucydides would feel about that. Wasn't Thucydides the guy who invented the idea of history? The muse was, for the ancient Greeks, was Clio, I believe. But they probably didn't know, if you're going to cut them any kind of slack at all, they didn't know they were behaving in a racist fashion because they didn't know any goddamn history, because they haven't been taught any, because we have an educational system in this country that wants to teach, that we finally realize that everybody needs to know some math and some science, but along the way, it's treated, the educational process is treated like a zero-sum game, and so if we teach them math and science, well, we sure don't have time to teach them art or history, dance or debate, theater or music, you know, those things that make us essentially human. Because, you know, this wasn't some tubby 50-year-old cop on a horse. This was young, probably shaven-headed, muscle-bound, maybe roided to the gills. That's a thing in cop circles, the roids. And probably had never had shit for social studies, let alone actual history. It's just a guess. So Lady B says, the cops who led the black man down the street on a rope didn't think what they were doing was racist. In fact, they didn't think about it at all. They didn't give a fuck how it looked or how dehumanizing it was. They never thought that leading a grown black man down the street by a rope like he was a part of a herd of cattle would trigger feelings of disgust and racism among blacks. He was a fucking criminal, they thought. He didn't deserve any civil rights. A lot of truth in those sentences. A lot of it can be encapsulated with Lady B's three words. They never thought. They're not paid to think. Those guys aren't real law enforcement, Lady B continues. Law enforcement would take care to follow the rules. These clowns think they're on a goddamned Wild West TV show. They preen and prance around on horses because they think reenacting the good old days will somehow magically make things better. They know nothing about professionalism, honor, or integrity. It's all about appearance. They're fucking posers of the worst kind. Besides, how do you apprehend a bad guy who's running away on foot while you're on horseback? Do you rope him? Shoot him in the back? Well, we do have a member of the Supreme Court, Samuel Alito, who, when he was an appellate court judge, wrote an opinion stating that it was perfectly legal for a cop to shoot an African-American young man running away 30 feet away and posed no threat to the cop whatsoever, to shoot him in the back of the head and kill him. It's right there in the law reporters. These guys and the rest of this country's law enforcement agencies think the rest of us as civilians. They think this is a war, and they're the armed forces sent to protect us. What the fuck? No words. Real quick, I know Toni Morrison died. I think I read Beloved or saw the movie. I can't remember. It bothered me, though. The way they talked, they were children of former slaves, so they spoke broken English. the kind folks with a lack of education speak. Their education came from the world of Hard Knocks. It was a book about poverty and despair. It involved infanticide. God, it was just depressing. All the black literature that seemed to be available for free was about hardship and overcoming adversity. I wanted to read about white teenage angst. I wanted to be spooked by Stephen King. Their lives were more exciting. Not knocking Tony or Maya Angelou or Alice Walker, but back then, I didn't want to read sad stories. I just wanted to be a normal young woman leading a normal life. Why did books about my people always have to be about struggle? Rest in power, Tony. The Almighty has preparest a table for you in the presence of thine enemies. He has anointed your head with oil, thy cup runneth over. Anyway, we're slipping. We keep forgetting that you don't allow Nazis a forum. You take them out. 8chan shouldn't exist. Donald Trump shouldn't be president. He's not handling these shootings well. He's a sociopath, but most Americans don't care. They're making money. Getting shot at is just the price you pay for a great economy. I clean a water plant, Lady B says, and one of the guys who works there told me he had no idea that these and other mass shootings were tied to white supremacy. Says he doesn't follow the news very much because it's too depressing. Also, he adds in a hushed voice, the news media has a secret agenda. He makes good money. He didn't vote in the presidential election. This is how we think. We will never get anywhere as a country until we realize that not all humans will and want to think like we do. We have so many diverse ideas that contributed to who we are. We're all immigrants. We're a great country because of that, not in spite of it. Oh, and on a personal note, white folks, it was a white person who shipped your jobs overseas. You basically told them to. He said it was a good way for them to save money and pay less taxes. And you'd do the same goddamn thing, too, if you were in their shoes. This is America. We are repeating history all over again. We didn't educate ourselves on the lessons of history. We thought that by pretending our terrible past didn't exist, it would go away. But like that sandwich you forgot in your gym locker over the summer, it's coming back to stink up the place. Now we got to air out that locker and start over. We should be in the streets. We should lock the gates. But that might interfere with our jobs. This is America, sings Childish Gambino. We just want the money. Go get your money. Don't catch yourself slipping. Lady B. And as usual, my response begins with, wow. Just wow. But I shared that because it is reminiscent of a clip I saw recently it was sent to me in Messenger. Kenneth sent it to me. And it's Eddie Glaude of Princeton University on a topic that touches on a lot of what Lady B was talking about. And I'm hoping the damn thing will open. I'm off and running and rhyming. The question about social studies and history, Randy in PA reminds us, I brought that question to Dr. Bill recently. Probably need to go over that again, or ask him to go over that again. But let's check in with that clip of Eddie Glaude. There's a considerable amount of real, well, reality spoken here.
I mean, you know, America's not unique in its sins as a country. We're not unique in our evils, to be honest with you. I think where we may be singular is a refusal to acknowledge them. And the legends and myths we tell about our inherent, you know, goodness to hide and cover and conceal so that we can maintain a kind of willful ignorance that protects our innocence. See, the thing is that when the Tea Party was happening, we were saying, pundits, oh, it's just about economic populism. It's not about race. When people knew, social scientists were already writing that what was driving the Tea Party were anxieties about demographic shifts, that the country was changing, that they were seeing these racially ambiguous babies on Cheerios commercials, that the country wasn't quite feeling like it was a white nation anymore. And people were screaming from the top of their lungs, yo, this is not just simply economic populism. This is the ugly underbelly of the country. See, the thing is this, and I'll say this, and I'll take the hit on it. There are communities that have had to bear the brunt of America confronting, white Americans confronting the danger of their innocence. And it happens every generation. So somehow we have to kind of, oh my God, is this who we are? And just again, here's another generation of babies. Think about it. That two-year-old had his bones broken by two parents trying to shield him from being killed. A woman who has been married to this man for as long as I've been on the planet almost, lost her husband. For what? And so what we know is that the country has been playing politics for a long time on this hatred. We know this. So it's easy for us to place it all on Donald Trump's shoulders. It's easy for us to place Pittsburgh on his shoulders. It's easy for me to place Charlottesville on his shoulders. It's easy for us to place El Paso on his shoulders. This is us. And if we're going to get past this, we can't blame it on him. He's a manifestation of the ugliness that's in us. I've had the privilege of growing up in a tradition that didn't believe in the myths and the legends because we had to bear the brunt of them. Either we're going to change, Nicole, or we're going to do this again and again, and babies are going to have to grow up without mothers and fathers, uncles and aunts, friends, while we're trying to convince white folk to finally leave behind a history that will maybe, or embrace a history that might set them free from being white. Finally.
You got chills? I got chills. Jack in Shreveport said Eddie kicked ass. Early, and that's it's a 2 minute and 58 second clip, and I didn't interrupt it. I wanted the full force of it to land. But Eddie Glaude makes, and by the way, Eddie Glaude is the one who said Cold Civil War the other day. Hi, Eddie. You just said a whole bunch of stuff that we've only been saying here on the horn for about, 15 years. And as an aside, let's take a moment to note that he speaks the name of the MSNBC host to whom he's addressing, and that's Nicole Wallace. Now, we talk about the check clears, and we talk about how access is the coin of the realm in the multimillionaire for-profit media. Nicole Wallace ran the communications shop for George W. Bush. I'm not sure. She may have even been. I'm pretty sure she was on board when Katrina happened. And George was photographed playing an upside-down guitar at a resort in Arizona, I think it was, on his birthday, while New Orleans drowned. That was around the same time that Kanye West said the one valuable thing that has ever emanated from his mouth that I'm aware of, George Bush, don't like black people. In fact, when George had someone type up his memoirs for him, he said that was the single most upsetting moment of his entire presidency. Having someone state publicly what seemed obvious to anyone who was paying attention. Most upsetting thing of his presidency wasn't the million innocent Iraqis that he slaughtered on a lie. It was having someone say publicly what we all knew privately. Because, again, you have to be carefully taught. And he was taught by a mama who said she was worried that all those Negroes from from New Orleans would get too comfortable in Houston living in the fucking Astrodome. That was a million years ago, wasn't it? Well, it was, if we allow ourselves to forget even our own recent history. But Eddie Glaude says something in the early part of that clip. He says, that was during the days of the Tea Party, and the sociologists had already identified that there was a growing uneasiness that America was no longer going to be a white country. And it's true as far as it goes, I guess. But when have we ever? We have been a white-dominated country. But this place has never been had nothing but white people in it. My God, there weren't any white people here prior to 1492. This year is the 500th anniversary of the arrival of Cortez in Mexico, which began the creation of that Creole culture. And biases in Mexico against indigenous people are such that even people who are obviously more indigenous than Hispanic take great umbrage at being called an Indian or a Native American or an indigenous person or a member of, or like they say in Canada, First Nations. Why would people be afraid of, well, where does the fear come from? I'll tell you, I think it comes from a fear of revenge. Deep down inside, a great deal of white America knows how rotten we have treated those whom we refer to as minorities. And it is a memory that is so long that it is probably buried in our gene structures. Because no sooner did America create a slave society in every one of the 13 colonies than they began to worry about what was going to happen in the night if anybody ever got pissed off about how thoroughly abused they were being. Or how thoroughly they were being abused. And they lived in mortal fear of slave uprisings. Because they were outnumbered. And so we get that idea of a white America that never really existed. It was a copper colored America before 1492. And only slowly, and through the goodwill of the people who lived here for the last 10,000 years or more, did those little white cultures that clung to the rocks of the shore take root. But he did speak with considerable power, Eddie Glaude, and truth. Flavio pointed out, he closed with "God help us all." That's how he ended the segment. I guess that's not how I have it, but... all of this that plagues us has been taught. We cannot emphasize that enough. It has all been taught. No one was to put use to Lady Gaga's words, born that way. We are not born, just because of the nature of human beings, the hairless primates that we are not born hating our own species. We never could have made it for the 100,000 or so years that we've been Homo sapiens, had that been the case. Note coming in from one of the original members of the Fraternity of Steve. That's our buddy Steve, formerly of China, and now points elsewhere, namely the West Coast. Hi, Bob. Long time no chat. Just had to send this one on, being so insanely a matter of pictures and 10,000 words. Saw this on the BBC page, and it sure does make us and Texas look real good, don't it? Hope things are improving back your way. Been listening to some of your recent podcasts. No, it wasn't in Arizona. It was in Texas. Texas police have apologized after an image of two white officers on horseback leading a handcuffed black man. Yeah, it was Galveston. Galveston Police Chief Vernon Hale said on Monday the technique was acceptable in some scenarios, but that officers showed poor judgment in this instance. There was no malicious intent, and he's changed department policy to prevent the use of this technique. Well, day late, dollar short. Steve from the West Coast says, the cowards down there have changed their policy. Yeah, right. You know as I do, though. To the pigs, it would have been so much more kick-ass fun to gallop after the poor man for a few seconds and then shoot him. At least hog time, Texas style. I'd love to know what John Bridavo thinks about this, because that's kind of down his neck of the woods, I do believe. Ron in Raleigh says, the brother being led on a tether reminds me of the opening scene of Django Unchained. The more things change, the more they stay the same. In Mississippi, 680 undocumented workers were arrested today. I checked the stories online, and oddly enough, none of the people that hired these folks was arrested. Wouldn't it make more sense to arrest the folks that facilitate the undocumented workers being employed in the first place? I don't blame the people from working, seeing as how NAFTA has ruined their ability to make a living at home. I'm saying we have the wrong focus. Well, see, what was his name? Rubachkin? Shalom Rubachkin was running a kosher slaughterhouse in Iowa and running it entirely on the backs of undocumented immigrants. They rounded up the immigrants and put them in a stockyard for a while. ICE did several years ago. And they actually prosecuted Shalom Rubachkin a couple of years ago. He got a pardon because he was oh so sorry for using undocumented immigrant labor for his kosher slaughterhouse. Flavio says, Galveston, they were sorry. They were sorry they were caught. Ta-da! Darlene in Connecticut says, oh, yeah, I heard that the other night. That was an incredible oration by Eddie on Nicole Wallace's show. David Jolly followed with an incredibly sagacious oration later in the show as well, laying the GOP bare for its perniciousness. All the more amazing as he is now a former Republican. Although none of these expat Republicans would ever become Democrats, we're too low on the totem pole for that to occur. David went independent, but with a capital I for disaffected Republican. But I swear, if I didn't know any better, I thought that Jolly had taken a page directly from the Horn's book. He sounded exactly like you with his admonishments of the GOP and his pleas to dethrone the Republicans from power. Well, you know, we whisper these things into the universe, and we're way out in front of the curve, but eventually good ideas, right ideas, cannot help but bubble to the surface. And, of course, Joe Scarborough is now an independent. Yeah. He just wants to go back to being one of the Republicans, being a Republican from back in the day when they said the quiet parts quietly instead of saying the quiet parts loud like the Republicans are doing now. Yeah, did you see, asks Ron, was the video with that clip? Ms. Wallace was looking a mite dyspeptic during Eddie's talk. She looked as though she'd swallowed something very unpleasant. She and those like her seldom have the facts laid out for them in such a powerful and undeniable way. Yeah, and then, she goes home to Connecticut or New Jersey or, I don't know, maybe she's got a penthouse in Manhattan. Who knows? And just make it all go away and we'll talk about something else tomorrow. But there is a reality to the fact that if you have been a Republican in the last 20, 30, 40 years, you're part and parcel of why this happened. There's a memo written by Pat Buchanan during the Nixon administration talking about how there was no point for Republicans to ever campaign for the African-American or the Hispanic vote. But that what the Nixon team needed to do was go for that good white Catholic vote. And play the race card from morning till night. Guess what? It worked. Subject, white supremacist cops. Kyle in Kentucky stands says, I have family who's cop, and they often boast about how they treat black people as less than human. They often decry that they can't be worse to them and just kill them thug gangbangers on the spot when they stop them for fear of being fired. What you're talking about, the horse incident, doesn't surprise me. America has institutional racism built into all its bureaucracies. Until that is addressed, it's not that America won't get better, it's that America can't get better. I would even suggest doesn't want to get better. And that may be at the core of all of this. Some of us would like America to get better. But you know what? As long as there's a noisy plurality in this country who doesn't, we probably won't. As Kyle says, stamping out the racism and bigotry that's institutionalized into our country is going to be heavy lifting. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, I've been saying for years they wouldn't come here if those type of employers wouldn't hire them. Those employers should be locked up. Yeah, don't look for the maggots to chant lock them up anytime soon at one of the Clavering rallies. Don't do that. Okay, I have an anonymous challenge to try to take a bite out of the $580 hole we're in. A $100 challenge, you know this phrase, and it's so damn true. When billionaires choose, you lose. But here's the thing. It's only good for this evening. And, program note, only good until 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, because this program's only going to be 2 hours this evening because Mike's under the weather. And so I'll be filling in around the Malloy campfire over on Progressive Voices on TuneIn here about 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So we've got an hour and 20 minutes to raise $100. Then that will get doubled by our anonymous friend, and that'll leave us with only $380 to go in fundraising thus far in the month of August and in this week. Thank you to our anonymous benefactor. Scott in San Diego says, it's funny that Eddie Glaude should mention the Tea Party's place in our current equation. Interestingly, this is something I addressed online in the spring of 2016, smack dab in Trump's run-up to power. Here's what I had to say. It's lengthy, but worth sharing with the Horn family. In recent days, more than a few people have been scratching their heads and pondering exactly why we find ourselves with the unappealing prospect of having Donald Trump as the presumptive GOP nominee for president in 2016. As a public service, let me take a moment and explain why this has happened. In early 2009, not too terribly long after Barack Obama was sworn in as the 44th president, we began to see a rather unusual thing. Seemingly random and organic, a collection of some rather oddly dressed characters began to show up in groups to oppose the new president. It seemed that nearly everywhere you looked, you'd see roving bands of puffy, patriot shirt-wearing, don't-tread-on-me, flag-waving, flintlock-shooting, iron-welding, three-cornered hat-wearing activists loudly and colorfully pledging to take their country back. By all appearances, it seemed they were intent upon taking us back, all right, all the way back to the late 1700s. They ranted and they raved and they pledged with all their might to set things right, far right, in America. By 2010, they retook the U.S. House of Representatives. In 2014, they recaptured the Senate. And in the 2016 GOP primaries, they whittled down some 17 aspirants to the presidency until just one remained, Donald J. Trump, patriot extraordinaire. I watched this spectacle closely, and more than once I warned whoever would listen that if they succeeded, the result would not be pretty, and here we are. The strange dynamic isn't anything new. In the past 15 or 20 years, the general mindset in America has seemed to have deteriorated to the point where the pessimism is so thick you can chop off chunks of it with a hand-forged axe. Much of it recently has been fed by this delusional crowd who has now given us Trump. They've systematically convinced enough well-meaning voters that wearing a tri-cornered hat, a puffy patriot shirt, and waving a don't tread on me flag is all that's necessary to be a patriot and true believer in America. All the theatrics and, of course, casting a vote for Donald Trump. But consider, if it could somehow be arranged for them all to be magically transported back in time to Independence Hall in Philadelphia, these puffy shirt patriots would be laughed right out of the room by the founders. Most of them, deep down, have simply stopped believing in the greatness of this country and its people, all of its people. Their pessimism is like a virus. It's a contagious, and if it's not dealt with soon, more people will continue to be infected by the sickness that's being spread by them. In a real way, the fever's already been running rampant. If you don't think so, look around at what's not being done or what's being undone. We've stopped getting many important, necessary things handled because they've convinced many otherwise straight-thinking people to stop believing we can still do necessary and important things or that great things just aren't worth doing anymore. Perhaps this has been their plan all along. It's as un-American as anything our worst enemy might do. The founders would have laughed them out of the room because these people don't really believe in the hard work, mutual sacrifice, and national teamwork that true greatness calls for and that the founders themselves actually believed in. For these folks, it's all about playing dress-up and spouting platitudes that the majority of people today think are quaint, outdated, and largely unworkable in the modern world. When they're not busy waving their vintage flintlocks or modern assault weapons or quoting their favorite long-dead white guy, you'll usually find them displaying behavior that's not even that appropriate for your average two-year-old. I don't want to. You can't make me. It's been accurately said of Donald Trump that he suffers from a complete lack of impulse control. He represents the perfect candidate for these puffy shirt patriots, and in primary season, he played to these mutterers and malcontents perfectly. And now, Trump and his motley crew want to foist this same pessimistic nonsense to voters in the general election. Remember, this is all being written long before we ever had the American Carnage speech, where we all bleed, we all bleed. In the 6 months remaining until Election Day, we would all do well to take a cue from the founders and laugh these pathetic fools right out of the room. Nothing's set in stone, and luckily there's still time to save ourselves, only it turns out there wasn't. From Trump on down, they're all nothing more than an overly loud minority who simply wishes not to be bothered with doing great things, especially if the doing of them demands anything from them or inconveniences them in any way. America still has all the potential in the world to be just as great as we ever were, and more, but it will not happen by electing Donald Trump. Unless and until we start behaving in a manner that's consistent with meeting our highest and best potential and achieving our true greatness again, we'll remain confined in the stuffy, cramped, dark little corner of these whimpering, whiny, cowering, pathetic victims. Donald J. Trump and his paranoid band of puffy shirt patriots. Come on, America. You can do better than this. Only, well, we couldn't. And we didn't. Randy in PA says, I ran into a highly educated white professional today. He said we shouldn't try to make things fair and that we'll muck things up if we try to achieve utopia. Seems like standard conservative messaging. Exactly. Shalom Rubashkin. Flavio says, oh, look, what do you know? A fraudster pardoning a fraudster. In November 2009, Rubashkin was convicted of 86 counts of financial fraud. Bank fraud, mail fraud, wire fraud, money laundering. He got 27 years for messing with the money. In a separate trial, though, he got off on the charge of knowingly hiring underage workers. On December 20th, 2017, starting the large bipartisan push for the measure, President Donald Trump commuted Rubashkin's prison sentence after only 8 years served. Now, my take, says David in South Carolina, Stan. Arsonist arrives at fire in a fire truck, then uses the fire hose to spray gasoline on smoldering fire. Ding, ding. Brother Deacon Asa, regarding kosher slaughterhouse in Iowa. Iowa's well known for its kosher hogs, ain't it? Some of the finest kosher bacon in the country. It was a cattle. I think it was a cattle and chicken killing outfit, if I recall correctly, Asa. Bill in Allentown. This country doesn't think Catholics are real Christians compared to other Christians. I heard about the John Birch Society trying to make sure JFK wasn't elected president. I believe that the founder of this group was the father of the Koch brothers. He wasn't the founder, but he was the original sweet, sweet money that got that nasty business going. Okay. So, gosh, we haven't even gotten into the prayer meeting part of the program. Funny how that happens sometimes. I have a sneaking suspicion we will, however. And again, we got a $100 anonymous challenge on the table that'll knock out, if it's met, by the end of the program, 8 p.m. We're an hour short this evening. That'll knock out it'll knock out one of the previous days that we're behind by. So hopefully that challenge will not go by the boards. Let's run over and check in, I think, with, I think it's Tracy. Is that you, Tracy?
It is. Hi. Hi, honey. How are you?
It's only 83 here in the studio. Yeah. Another evening of naked radio, that kind of thing. The horror.
The horror. Well, you know, I it's been obviously a rough couple of days. So much so that I basically had a meltdown. I just, after Saturday, Jan and I went and saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was a really long movie, but for the most part, I enjoy it. I think it's the first time I've seen a Quentin Tarantino movie that the N-word wasn't used. Come like, because I told Jan, I said, well, I don't think there's any black people in the movie, so there will be no excuse for him. And Samuel Jackson's not in the movie, so there will be no excuse for him to be able to use the N-word in the movie at all. And so we went and saw the movie. We went to went to lunch, went to the store, got a little few things for dinner, and woo-woo-woo-woo-woo. By the time we got home, we had found out about, you know, what happened in El Paso. And we were just, you know, we're still reeling from Gilroy, because it's crazy, because every year, because the Gilroy Festival is in July, you know, and it's not long after my birthday, and we always say, you know, 1 year we're going to, you know, just kind of go and, you know, maybe do my birthday up there or what have you. But alas, another year has passed and we didn't go. Well, thank God I didn't. So we're still dealing with that, and we hear El Paso, and then Sunday morning I get up, you know, because I get up at the crack of dawn pretty much, so I can, you know, do my workout before it gets hot and woo-woo-woo-woo-woo. And I'm hearing the news about a shooting, and I'm thinking that the newscasters got it wrong. I'm like, wait a minute. Or I misheard, because I'm like,
oh, yeah, that was Sunday morning at 5:28 for me. Shooting in Dayton.
Right.
No, not D, E, El Paso.
Right. And so, and then when I woke up Sunday morning, because like I said, I'm usually up, you know, 4 o'clock my time, 7 a.m. your time. And I hear about, like I said, I thought I misheard about Dayton. I thought they made a mistake, that they were talking about El Paso, or I misheard. And so I go and so I turn on the news, and I'm like, mother of God, there was another shooting within hours of the one in El Paso. And my mom, you know, and I pretty much went about my day not so badly Sunday, but a malaise started sinking in, because I had all these plans that I had planned on doing on Sunday. The one thing I did do my workout. I didn't go to church, because I found out about a black church in the valley, not far from my house, from other members of my Weight Watchers group. And I, you know, had planned on going, and I just didn't go. And I just kind of, you know, wandered, you know, aimlessly about my day on Sunday. Monday, kind of same thing, because the young lady that I drive, she's on break. Today was actually her first day back to school. So Monday morning, I was up, and I think that's when I posted about what was going on with me. As you know, everybody who has listened to this show over the last 8 years, you know, I have struggled terribly with mental health issues. I'm bipolar. And so I feel things on a whole nother level, because I am an empathetic person. I have empathy. I actually care about other human beings. So when stuff like this happens, it hits me hard. But what really hit me hard, and what was really, because I wrote on my Facebook, I know there's stuff going on, but I just can't put my finger on what's happening with me. But then it hit me, what's happening with me. I'm a black woman who is a lesbian, and I am a moving, I now live in a country where I am, who, because of who I am or who I love, and because of my race, I can trigger an unprovoked attack. Now, dealing with somebody like me who has a mental health issue already, with just the, you know, just the day-to-day shit that a person has to go through just for being alive, just from being a person in this country, you know, dealing with having to pay bills, you know, keep your relationships together with your significant others, your family, you got, you know, dealing with people having to go to work and just the everyday kind of things you got to deal with. And then in my case, I'm trying to lose weight. So we're trying to do all that too, because, you know, essentially I was eating myself to death. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to, you know, go to Weight Watchers. I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to work on this. And then, and on top of everything else, I have to also take care of my mental health, because if I don't, then it's going to be even worse. So it's, you know, it's a continual thing of everything that I have to do just to, you know, just to remain functioning in this world, that in this place that we call United States. Now, then we add to the fact that I'm a Black woman who's a lesbian. And we all know what that means. And, I mean, okay, not we all. Anybody that's, you know, cognizant and a member of this, of the family, of the Horn family, realizes what I, you know, what we're going through. But you don't understand that there is a real fear, a real fear that I have.
Gut level.
That I've never had before. It's gut level. I have never, look, I am not naive. I have dealt with, from the first time that this white, the white woman who told me at 5 years old that I spelled my name wrong, to the time that when we moved to our neighborhood, the first Black family on our neighborhood, in our neighborhood, when the for sale signs went up, I was seven years old, you know. I have, for the first time somebody called me, told me to go back to Africa. And all this before I'm even in elementary school. From the first time somebody told me that I was too loud, or that I was, you know, I was being irrational because, you know, or I took things too seriously. Oh, it was just, you know, I'm sorry if I offended you, or it was just a joke. Or when somebody made a joke about Jesse Robinson in my cab because they had saw the movie 44 on the airplane, and the flight ended before the movie did, and the joke was, well, you know, well, of course, I know how it ended. He was lynched, wasn't he?
What? Jackie Robinson? Jesus.
Yeah, no, this was an asshole white guy, and I definitely thoroughly went off on him on that one. But it's just the things that I and any other Black person has to deal with. There was a brother, I guess on Sunday, who was inducted into the Football Hall of Fame. Did you hear his speech?
No. No, Sunday was an out-of-the-loop day for me.
Yeah. I believe his name was Champ Bailey or something like that. I'm not remembering.
Oh, I know who Champ Bailey is.
Okay. Well, this was his acceptance speech. To basically, I'm paraphrasing, but the gist of it was, to my white friends, when I, as a Black man, tell you that I have a fear for myself and my children because of what's happening in my country, don't dismiss me. Don't poo-poo me. Just listen. Because the Pulse nightclub wasn't that long ago in Orlando. Reverend Emanuel wasn't that long ago in South Carolina. Those are two instances where people were killed because of their sexuality and because of their race. I'm both. I now go into stores or anywhere that I go, and I scan exit to see where the emergency exits are, or where I can take duck and cover. I grew up in the crack wars of the 80s in South Central. Okay, so I know what it's like to have to duck and cover because of a drive-by shooting. I know what that's like. But like I said, I never really felt, even in those times, I never really felt that I would be killed, God. I never feared for my life. I never worried until my son was attacked the day after the election.
Right, because what we're talking about is the difference between deliberate actions and randomness.
And a
drive-by is random. And it's mean, and it's
random.
Vicious, and bloody, and hateful, but it's a crapshoot. An ambush is not that.
No.
And all of the when Hispanic people were targeted in El Paso, they were the victims of an ambush that was deliberately designed to kill them. It wasn't just somebody flinging bullets. You know, I saw a story.
No.
I saw a story a while back. I mean, it's just the world we live in. A young woman at a rest area on I-55 in Mississippi. It runs north-south up through St. Louis, that sort of thing. She'd stopped at a rest area. And she had gotten out of her car. Meanwhile, a couple of miles up the road, a big transport vehicle had two big-ass wheels let go, and they went rolling down the road a couple of miles or so, popped over the median. And as she stood there getting out of her car at the rest area, they flattened her and killed her. And, once the lawyers get done, we'll sort out who, you know, negligently did whatever they did that caused that to happen. But in the grand scheme of things, that's just horrible, random, bad, damn luck. She wasn't targeted by those tires. Had she been a minute sooner getting to the rest area or a minute later, nothing would have happened. But in that instant, in that moment, lay her doom. And you can't really legislate against that kind. You can't legislate against rolling snake eyes.
No.
But it's the difference you talk about. You know, not being afraid growing up during the crack wars. Because you weren't a target per se.
Nope.
You were just somebody who happened to be in the zone.
That's it.
But that's not the same thing as what is going on now in America. I just got a note from Mike in Cascadia responding to the anonymous challenge. But he said, by the way, did you see this today from the Southern Poverty Law Center? And I did see it earlier. It's in the stack. A guy named Matthew Q. Gebert, or maybe Gebert, G-E-B-E-R-T.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is a foreign affairs officer in the Bureau of Energy Resources at the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
He has an online alter ego he refers to as Coach Finstock.
Oh, Jesus. It's not going to end well.
No. And as Coach Finstock, he talks about how he wants to build a country for only white people. It was May of 2018 when he wrote, "Whites need a country of our own with nukes, and we will retake this thing lickety-split. That's all that we need. We need a country founded for white people with a nuclear deterrent, and you watch how the world trembles." In addition, he has overseen the Washington, D.C. chapter of a white nationalist organization. He's hosted white nationalists at his home. He published white nationalist propaganda online. How, and this couples, and I'm glad we're touching on all of this, and our conversations tend to run this way, Tracy, and I appreciate it.
Yep.
So add to that Tucker Carlson.
That asshole. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Because
the one that are we referring to what he said about there's no such thing as white supremacy?
I've got the clip right here. Stand by.
Where's this fucking? Okay.
But the whole thing is a lie. If you were to assemble a list, a hierarchy of concerns, of problems this country faces, where would white supremacy be on the list? Right up there with Russia, probably. It's actually not a real problem in America. The combined membership of every white supremacist organization in this country would be able to fit inside a college football stadium? I mean, seriously. This is a country where the average person is getting poorer, where the suicide rate is spiking. White supremacy, that's the problem. This is a hoax. Just like the Russia hoax, it's a conspiracy theory used to divide the country and keep a hold on power. That's exactly what's going on.
Now, bear in mind, he said this yesterday after the white supremacist murdered 22 people and injured two dozen more in El Paso.
Oh, my head.
And by the way, Tucker Carlson is a neo-maxi Zoom dweeby because he specifically referenced a college football stadium. This silly asshole doesn't realize, well, this hate-filled white supremacist asshole doesn't realize that there are lots of college football stadiums that are a hell of a lot bigger than pro ones. I think about the University of Tennessee stadium, Neyland Stadium, or the stadium at the University of Michigan. Those things hold over 100,000 people. 100,000 white supremacists is a problem. One white supremacist is a problem. And there's something else added in here that I think we need to take into account. Tracy, have you ever seen the photographs, painful as they are, of the 1920s rally, Klan rally, where they proudly marched in their robes right down Pennsylvania Avenue?
Yeah.
Tens of thousands of Klansmen. Well, those weren't tens of thousands of celibate Klansmen.
No, they had children.
And they taught their children. Now, those were 20 and 30-year-olds in the 1920s. That was my grandmother's generation. My grandfather was a Klansman of that era. They had three children. Those three children had between them, they had nine kids. So, you know, you see how the fan spreads out.
Well, God, yeah.
And not all of them were able to rise above the hatred that generation participated in. So let's say in the 1920s, you've got 100,000 Klansmen, and they each have two children. Well, that's 200,000 Klansmen.
Yep.
And by then we're into the baby boom, and they have four kids. That's 800,000 Klansmen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the math doesn't...
You're doing math, Bob.
I know. The math doesn't play out perfectly because not all children of Klansmen, right?
Right.
But...
I see where you're going with it, though.
Then you take it.
Well, it's like you're saying. When you said earlier, you know, people are not born into hate. People aren't born to hate. It has to be taught. So, you know, with Tucker, you know, Tuck-ass Carlton, you know, espousing his bullshit, saying, yo, white supremacy isn't a problem. You're blah, blah, blah. Fuck you. Because, see, you, as a, him, when I say you, I mean him, as a white man, will never be affected by white supremacy. Unless, well, he would never be shopping at Walmart or somewhere like that. Unless he's, you know, part of the collateral damage, or somebody that he loves or cares about is part of collateral damage when somebody goes into a shopping mall or a movie theater or whatever and hunting, you know, black people or brown people. So, the white supremacy problem would never, you know, affect him personally. So you got all, like you said, you have all these people who have been teaching their children and their grandchildren, and like you said, in their 20s, and then we got, you know, those kids, and then, like you said, your grandfather. That's only two generations. Fortunately, it seems because of who you are, it stopped with your dad, as far as your, you know, as far as that branch of the family tree. Went. But what about the other branches? And what about the other branches from the other branches for these other people? And now, you said 1920, so you're talking 100 years, basically, because next year we'll be in 2020.
Right,
yeah?
and
so
see,
100 years.
And see, dumbass Tucker doesn't even realize, well, I think he realizes he's just suppressing the information.
He realizes, he just says it's because, like you said, the check is clearing. And you got to say what he has to say to get paid. He knows the fuck what he's saying.
But the thing is, you don't have to walk around in Klan robes in order to be a white supremacist. In fact, during the Mississippi burning era, the civil rights era, the height of the violence, there was the Klan for the rednecks, and then there were the White Citizens Council for the bankers,
right,
and the judges and the ministers
and
the accountants
the
and the lawyers.
Folks. The white, you had the, those are the white collar races. And this is the problem why white people have this thing that, oh, I can't be a racist. Well, I'm not in the Klan, and I would never, you know, do these things, you know, like, so they can go see movies like, you know, The Help or the Green Book or God and Miss Daisy, or just any other, you know, pick a white saving movie, insert it into this sentence. And they'll sit back and they'll say, well, obviously I'm not a racist. I would never do something like that. But the problem is...
But the thing is, it begins in the cradle. And
yep.
It is as simple as having that word bandied about inside your home.
Yeah.
Just by example, I remember, I mean, this is just from our own little family history, the day, and we look back on it, and it was funny, but it wasn't at the time. The day I stopped at a car lot, just because I like to look at cars. And Agnes and the babies were there. And Ferg was just a little guy. And the salesman was wearing a hat very similar to a hat that a family friend wore. And out of the mouths of babes, Ferg looks up and says, Mama, That sorry bastard's got Uncle Randy's hat.
Oops.
Well, sorry bastard is not one of the terms that Agnes is known for using. That was on me. Now, when you take something like that word, and it's there every day of your life, from the moment you lay in the cradle, you're going to use it.
Yes.
And you're going to be confused, if you're my generation, when you've heard it, and I didn't hear it all my life growing up as a child, but I know plenty of kids that I started first grade with did, because they were terribly confused when the first grade teacher said, because we were an integrated classroom in Alabama, it's not okay to use that word. And I don't want to hear that word in my classroom. And I will send you to the principal if you do. And it calmed things down considerably, but the problem is that's 1969. And in 50 years' time, in 2019, we've got tax-exempt organizations out there who will go to court and provide a free lawyer to an aggrieved racist family and claim that their constitutional rights are being violated because little Johnny can't say
ginger.
Ginger. And that's how we've gone from bad to worse.
Well, it's like, you know, it's, those are the same people who will argue, well, guns don't kill people, people kill people, with the gun, or whatever the stupid ass argument is, and, you know, argue that, you know, it's a violation of their rights for background checks and red flag laws and all these things. And every time I think about, you know, how, you know, they're always talking about these things, these laws that keep people from their rights, you know, much to the exclusion of mine, because I don't particularly like it if somebody will call me ginger, because I don't want to go to jail again. And, you know, orange is not my color. Plus, I don't like the idea that, you know, your right to own a gun trumps my, supersedes my right to life. Because I kind of remember after the Newton shooting, it was a Joe the Plumber, you know, your dead kids shouldn't keep me from being able to get a gun. And I'm like, holy shit. So I got to thinking about things, you know, about law, about quotes from MLK. And it's like, he said, morality cannot be legislated, but behavior can be regulated. Judicial decree may not change the heart, but they can restrain the heart.
Absolutely true.
It's like, you know, background checks, you know, banning. Do you know, and it shocked the hell out of me, our police chief on Monday morning, he held a press conference, said that assault weapons, now this is the chief of police of the Los Angeles LAPD, said that assault weapons should be banned, and he doesn't understand why they are not. That they should reinstitute the ban on assault weapons. That's coming from the police, the chief of police for the LAPD.
Well, you know, a lot of times you'll find, because cops are often the ones who deal with them. I mean, 6 Dayton cops, you know, 9 people were dead, many others injured, before they could do anything about the guy in Dayton. And so they have a vested interest in getting this crap off the streets.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. And it's just when I, you know.
Because, you know, not all cops. I'm not a guy. I don't hate the police, okay? But it's hard. It's hard not to. It's hard not to out of that story out of Galveston.
Right. I heard about it, and I was going to read about it, but everything, I have been so consumed and what's been happening with my own self. This is, you know, it's how worried Jan was about me yesterday, because I haven't slept in 2 days. I was feeling myself slipping back into old patterns, and I've worked so hard, but you know, if you get triggered, God only knows where, you know, how far, how deep down the rabbit hole you will go. So yesterday I had to meet with the young man that I guess I kind of am his therapist, sort of kind of occupational therapist, what have you. And I had to meet with him, and I had to just, Jan's like, you haven't slept. You're on edge. Just take Uber, because I cannot function knowing that, because if I know you're out there driving and you're not in a good state of mind and you're tired, and I was tired because I hadn't slept. Just take Uber and I'll pay for it, because I can't have anything happening to you. So I Ubered there. I Ubered to my favorite. So yesterday I had to do comfort food. So there's this Mexican restaurant called Socorro. I told you about this place, and you know, they do the handmade tortillas that are thick. And I had cheese quesadilla with, you know, the Monterey Jack cheese. There was this brimming with cheese. So not anything on Weight Watchers. And I also had albondigas soup. And the meatballs were the size of, not as big as a softball. They're about a slightly smaller than a tennis ball. That's just how big the meatballs are.
God almighty, that's the size of a matzo ball at Katz's Deli in New York.
Right, pretty much. And so there's two meatballs in there, and, you know, zucchini and potato, and the broth, you know, everything is made from scratch. So then, I had an appointment with my therapist. So my therapist's office is about a half a mile from where the restaurant is, and I didn't want to call an Uber for them to drive me for half a mile, so I walked it. And you know, I put on my music, and it was hot. I was like, holy shit, it's hot out here. It wasn't that bad, because the street that I was on was pretty much tree lined. So you know, I had my moments, and I used those, my walks, for my meditation. I used yesterday after yesterday morning, I cried walk, because I was just, like I said, I was so overwhelmed and just brimming with emotion that I didn't, and you know, and underlying, I was seething with anger, because I was so pissed off that there are still people in this country that, you know, still, but they're good people that, you know, and, but they are, they, I don't, and they voted for Donald Trump, and they don't see him for what, you know, they still insist that he's not a racist or what have you. And one of which is my brother-in-law. I haven't talked to him, you know, in a while. And that was another issue that I was grappling with, because next year, we're supposed to go on a cruise, and we put the deposit down, and But after the shooting, because he is, him is going to be my, me and my mom and Jan, my brother-in-law's sister, and my sister, and I just told Jan, I'm like, I don't know if I could do this. I don't know if I could be on a ship for 7 days with this person who I know has no problem with Donald Trump.
Well, the question becomes, the question then becomes, can I spend a week on a boat without that topic arising?
Bob, have you met me?
Well, I mean, I feel like I have, but, you know.
Okay, but you know what I mean.
Well,
I wouldn't
run out to Harris in Reno and put money on that not happening.
and Jan's like, well, you know, baby, this is a trip of a lifetime. And I said, I know, but there's other cruises and we don't have to go with them. I just don't want to be put in that position because I cannot be, because at this point, even if you are still in support, and maybe I'm being too harsh, but I don't know. But if you're a quote unquote good person and you voted for Trump, and after everything, because I was,
then it's time. If you're a good person and you voted for Trump, it's time to repent.
It's time to repent. If you are still an unrepentant Trump supporter after the baby's being put in the concentration camp. That part, especially with my brother-in-law, after what he said about four black women. Now, besides the fact what he's been saying about Maxine Waters, but this, what he said about, you know, Presley, Tlaib, or AOC, and you know. I can't always mess up everybody's name, but to say to go back to your country and then you're married to a black woman. See, you see my problem?
Yes. Yes.
Your sister-in-law's a lesbian. And you know what he says about, well, he doesn't, I don't think he's really actually saying anything, you know, outwardly about gay people, but he has gone after the trans community. But you got three brother-in-laws that are black men and a nephew that's a black man.
Exactly.
And you are, so if you're not, if you haven't stood up and said at a point and to say, this man, I made a horrible mistake by voting for him, and I will not only did I make a mistake, but I will not vote for him in 2020. That's what I want to hear, because if I don't hear that, then I can't be bothered with you anymore. Am I wrong in this? Am I being too harsh?
No. Your only other alternative, and this is difficult because it runs contrary to the grain. You don't talk, and this goes back to that wager about a week on a boat. If you don't bring it up, maybe it doesn't come up. And that applies to almost any other topic and almost any other group. But the problem with Trump supporters is they want to be in your face with it.
They
won't not talk about it.
That part.
And the minute they do talk about it, your only response is to say, listen, you already know how I feel about this. The topic is dropped right now. And you don't raise it again, or we have a problem. the choice is yours. If you say another word about it, we're going to have a problem. So, drop it. Leave it be. You know we are divided on this issue. There was no reason for you to bring it up except to try to start something.
Right.
I mean, does that make sense to you?
And this, yeah, and this is the thing, because this is like, and Jan, because, you know, Jan can't stand him. And I, you know, I tolerate him because of my sister. But it's just, it's like, and for the most part, he doesn't, because he is, a, he, you know, because of when he's in our spaces with my family, he's the minority. And he knows, he doesn't bring it up to the, for the most part, unless somebody, and then he, you know, he tries to say something, and then he gets, you know, he gets to look like, dude, don't, just don't. Because see, what bothers me and what upsets me about him is the fact that he thinks, he doesn't understand why. He thinks, what did he say? Because he goes like, because I made a passing joke the last time we were in Vegas together because they were having an anti-Trump rally in Vegas the weekend that we were there. And I'm like, hey, Bob, you want to go with me to the Trump rally, anti-Trump rally, and wear your MAGA hat? Now, that was terrible, I know. But he's like, well, I get to say what I want to say. And I'm like, this is what bothers me. It's like they don't see the damage. They don't see what is being done to this country because, again, it won't affect him. He doesn't have to worry about being pulled over other than getting pulled over and either getting a ticket or being waved on along a way to, you know, go ahead on about your business because, you know, as Paul Mooney says, he has the complexion for the protection. I had never heard that. This young brother told me that the other day, and I almost died. The complexion for the protection. So he does not have to worry about the things that I have to worry about or my son has to worry about. His son. Like because when he said something to me once about, you know, he's tired of being stereotyped, and I just looked at him, I'm like, have you ever had to have a conversation with your son about what to do if the police pull you over? Have you ever had to have that conversation, Bob?
Me? Have I had that conversation?
No, my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law's name is Bob, and that's
what I'm saying. Okay.
Have you ever had that conversation?
Because I have had that, I have had that conversation.
But I'm like, just have you ever worried with your son about an encounter with the police? And no, he has never. Because as Lady B pointed out, or whoever did, criminal justice or whatever, the cops treat black people far differently than white people. They treat light-skinned black people far differently than dark-skinned black people. I had a nephew that I had custody of for a while who was got in repeated trouble over and over, and the cops kept giving him chance after chance, and I told him, as real as I could be, and I said, little boy, you know the only reason why you're not under the jail is because your light bright, damn near white, and you're pretty. Because if you were an average nappy-headed Negro, you would have been under the jail. But you're pretty, and you present yourself well, and you're smooth. And so, when they see you, they don't see trouble. They just see a light-skinned young, a pretty, intelligent light-skinned black man, young man. Who, you know, he just needs a chance and he'll do better. And I was happy that worked out for him, but he, of course, you know, as ever took, because every time as a matter of fact, he just went back to jail on a gun charge. So God only knows how long he's going to be in jail now. But the thing is, this country has just, and like somebody said, it's not that we can't do better. They don't want to do better. Keep the status quo. They like it the way it is. Why should they do better? Why should we give people equity? Why should we make sure that people have a fair break? Because see, if we have equity, if we treat people, we do something about the criminal injustice system, and maybe not throw a brother in jail for having a joint, and then have a bail that he can't get out of jail, because then if that's the case, where all these jails, all these private, privately owned prisons, they're gonna lose money, Bob.
Well, the prison system's not supposed to be a money-making prospect. At best, it is supposed to be revenue neutral. But this is what happens when predatory capitalism gets hold of the reins of government. Again, I go back to the campaign of 2000 when George W. Bush said, hey, I want to run the government like a business, like Enron.
Right. And we know how well that went over.
Because Enron was pining for the fjords. Within what, a year less of him taking office? I think I can't remember when Enron crapped out, but they did. It's hard to remember that far back now. But the thing is, these are Republican principles, not Trumpian principles, okay?
No!
And so as long as we pretend that, we all put on our little red dress and our little curly red wig and we sing "The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow" after Trump is gone, we are going to be as screwed after he's gone as we are now, because the problem is the Republican Party, period.
Party, isn't it? Well, this is like what
they're not going to voluntarily go and get well, because the minute that the Republican Party stops pumping racism into its being, it'll die. Mm-hmm. Now something will rise to replace it. And it will probably, if we look, for instance, just as an example, and I'm not opening that can of worms, but the Israelis hated the PLO. So they helped to destroy the PLO and brought in Hamas. They used Hamas to destroy the PLO, and it turns out that the PLO were damn near peaceniks, as far as Israel is concerned, compared to Hamas. Lately, we've been proven in our conversations to be so goddamn prescient. Let me say this now. The Republican Party has to be destroyed root and branch. But we need to be cognizant that the odds are that what comes after the destruction of the Republican Party will actually be worse. The official uniform will be a double-breasted suit of made out of Confederate flags, and they will sing songs with that word that isn't ginger, peppered throughout it.
Yes, they
will.
We think
things are bad now. We do not recognize how bad those things can get. And that's just fact.
unless something is, and like you said, we're on this, hopefully, because you said it's going to take a long time to undo the damage. It'll probably won't even be in our lifetime, Bob.
It is transgenerational work. I mean, it's like something that Les just said in a note to me. Assault weapon ban sounds nice in theory, but the cat is already out of the bag. None of these Nazi Klan assholes will give up theirs, and this current government won't try and take them either. That leaves black weapons owners like myself and melanated people, period, blowing in the breeze when dumb Fuhrer calls on his tooled-up cult to start the genocide. I didn't make this world. I'm reacting to it in self-defense. White supremacist fundamental Christian terrorists need to be banned, not a chunk of metal that may be the only thing standing between them and my family when Trump unleashes them to save his sorry ass from removal and death in prison. Just like nuclear weapons should have never been invented, the same way assault weapons should have never been sold to civilians. That genie's out of the bottle now, and it ain't going back in.
Oh, God, no. And, like, and there is, you know, because I was having a conversation with this very earnest white woman in Sprouts. Sprouts is like the... Do you have Sprouts out there?
No.
Never mind. Well, Sprouts is...
Sounds fun.
Like, it's a hybrid. I would say it's kind of like a cross between Trader Joe's and Whole Foods.
Definitely sounds fun.
But not as expensive as Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And
whole
a little
paycheck.
Bit more. A whole paycheck. And a little, and they have a little bit more stuff, produce, and they actually have a meat department and a seafood department. As a matter of fact, I was there the other day, and I got, wait for it, I got sea scallops, not the little buns, but the really nice,
oh,
big,
the big, yeah. Sweet, but buttery.
Sweet, buttery, yeah. Are you ready for how much I pay for them a pound?
Oh, my God.
Everyone?
Hit me.
$8.99 a pound.
Well, shit, that ain't bad.
No. Because they're usually about $18 a pound.
Yeah. That's like my manager's special ribeye the other day for $6 a pound.
See, that part.
Yeah.
So it's like, so, you know, I sauteed them, because I've never made scallops before, but for $8.99 a pound, was I not supposed to?
No, that was kind of a moral requirement. Yeah.
It was a moral responsibility.
Oh, and to do those things up in a little bit of olive oil and butter and saute them. And you throw in some really finely chopped shallot and a really super finely and a really super finely chopped serrano chili.
Nope, didn't do that.
Wowzer.
No. But I did the shallot and the scallops. Forget what I served it with. But it didn't really matter because it was amazing. And of course, seafood for Weight Watchers is 0 points, other than the butter. But I didn't really use that much butter because I didn't really need to. But they, because like I said, I had never made scallops before, so you know I went on to I Googled that shit and saw what to do. And I did it with asparagus. And
That would have been pretty and tasty.
It was great. It was yummy.
So you could have had you could have had the boiled shrimp that we had over the weekend, and 0 points, and just gone crazy.
Because
not fried, no oil, no butter, just I don't think those critters had been out of the Gulf of Mexico for more than 48 hours. And you can just eat them straight because they taste like butter when they're that fresh.
Yep. So scallops, lobster, scrimp. Yeah, it says scrimp. yesterday I did. I'm telling you, I don't know what it is about grits, but so yesterday for dinner, I
Jan's
did
gone wild.
She's gone wild.
Well, now that you've got the quality grits, you really need to take the time. You got a deep fryer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
Weight Watchers though, but no. But go ahead.
Yeah, I know. But this is this will be a comfort food timeout. You make your grits and you cheese them up. You know, sharp cheddar, and as loath as I am to say it, a little bit of Velveeta. And if you want to throw in some finely chopped jalapeno, that's cool too. Well, some people do that. Some people add pimento cheese sauce into it.
No.
Yeah, I know, because mayonnaise. But you know, you want to make what you're making is cheese grits, and
I did cheese grits. But I didn't fry them.
But wait, yeah, that's the thing. You put them in a pan, like a sheet cake pan. And you smooth them out till they're flat. You let them cool. You cover them, you know, with plastic wrap laying right on top of them. And you stick them in the fridge for about a day.
Okay.
And then you get them out and you can either cut them into triangles. Or you can cut them into, like, the thickness of steak fries.
Okay.
And you roll them in a little flour, a little seasoned flour, and you deep fry them for just boom, and they turn gold, and you pull them out. Jan will cry.
Yeah, she, it's so funny because I did grits, tilapia, and get this Brussels sprouts. What a hell of a combination. But I take I did the Brussels sprouts with the avocado oil. And of course, kosher salt. And because Brussels sprouts can be kind of persnickety when you cook them, so I'd nuke them for a couple of minutes just to get them kind of soft.
Yeah.
And then I roast them. And
yeah, over at Secret Sandwich here, they've got an entree that's been on the menu for about a year now. They blanch Brussels sprouts just real quick, and then they slice them in half. And the sliced side, they put them sliced side down on the griddle, and they char them. Nice. You know, they brown them a little bit, and then they serve them with grated Parmesan and lemon juice. And the lemon, they'll take they take the half of the lemon and they grill it too, so you get some caramelizing of the lemon as well. And you squeeze that over the.
this is why we have we have food, because we need. You know, we need intermittent food porn to kind of cleanse our palate away from the bullshit and the ugly and the hate.
Right, and see, I was planning, I was hoping before the shit hit the fan last week, I was hoping that this weekend was going to be my weekend to go in search of good ramen noodles and work up a big kick-ass ramen stock and make a bowl of, but it's probably still too hot, it's August. But I was gonna play with the grill and relax a little bit this weekend, but instead I think I'm gonna be haunting car lots and avoiding car salesmen.
Wait, something. Your car finally died on you?
Oh no! It got totaled.
Oh well, see, I haven't been listening to the show. What happened?
Yeah, well, it maybe go back and catch the Friday filibobster. It's complicated. Uh-oh. It's complicated. Everybody's okay. Nobody's hurt. But
well, that's all that matters. So you can just replace the car.
But we are automotively devastated.
Oh, I am so yeah. I go incognito, and I was Friday. I had meant to call in and listen to the show, but there's been so much happening, and I just my days. You know, and by the time I get home, I'm whipped. And it's like, okay, it was funny because I guess a couple of times somebody tried to call me from the Skype line during the show on Friday.
Trying to bring you in, yeah.
Trying to bring me in. And I'm like, oh, God, I can't because I'm doing stuff. I was cooking. I don't know what we were doing. I don't know. But, oh, before I forget, I got another television show suggestion.
Oh, yeah?
Have you watched any of the Dear White People?
No.
Well, they just...
What network?
On Netflix.
Okay.
They finally released the third season. It took them long enough. It was like, it's been like 2 years since the last season. But it's amazing.
How far are we away from me being able to, Agnes and me being able to binge watch season two of Pose?
Two more episodes.
Okay.
Last night was episode 8. So it's next week and then the week after. And then you guys will be able to binge it. But this season it's been extraordinary. Like I said, there's that one episode that is going to be a gut punch. I mean, all of the episodes are just so well done. And, you know, I'm pissed that none of the women were nominated for Emmys at all. Billy Porter did get nominated for, you know, Best Lead Actor Emmy, which is, it's historic because I think he's the first openly gay. Yes, he is the first openly gay black man, or openly gay man, period, but definitely the first openly gay black man to be nominated for Best Actor in a Drama. So we'll see how that goes. But I am undone. I am just livid that not one of the actresses, especially Blanca,
yeah,
was not nominated for, because you watched that show.
Oh, she's wonderful.
And how she was not nominated for Best Actress?
The Academy of Television Arts and Sciences is probably trying to sort out the politics of it. They'll probably get hit with a hashtag Emmys so CIS, and then maybe,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, because those women were,
I mean, shit, didn't they give an Oscar to Dustin Hoffman for Tootsie?
Right, and what's his name? Jeffrey Tambor got not one but two Emmys
for Transparent.
For Transparent, and he's a cisgender man. For playing a transgender man, woman rather. So it's like, you know, so you're going to get the Emmys you're going to get the accolades and the awards. Even Felicity Huffman, I don't know if she was, I know she was nominated for an Oscar for her portrayal of a transgender woman, you know. And I think it was called Trans something. But she's a straight woman. So a cisgender woman. So it's like, yeah. When you have openly talented beyond the pale, these women are just crazy talented.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, yeah. But
you know.
So I got two more episodes to go, and then we can spend a lazy Sunday binge watching, and I'll get an extra box of Kleenex for Agnes.
Yeah, got the Kleenex ready, because like I said, that one, and I'm going to be on the ready for the message on Messenger, because I'm going to tell. It took me, after watching that one particular episode, it took me a day to get myself together. I wasn't prepared for my reaction to, and once you've seen it, then we'll discuss it, because
okay.
And then you'll understand, you know, but I was not prepared, not so much the episode, but for my reaction to the episode, and because of my life experiences and the things that I've gone through and I've had to do in order to survive, that episode laid me to waste. And Jan was like, what's wrong? Because she didn't understand, you know, because like I said, I tell people, you don't tell all your business to your significant others, because this is something that you don't, people, as much as somebody loves you and, oh, I would never judge you, oh, blah, blah, bullshit. Because the first really bad argument, and, you know, you...
Oh, no, it comes out.
It comes out. No matter how much somebody loves you, no matter how... But that first really ugly, or even if it's not the first argument, but that real down and dirty, you know, thank God we don't have, you know...
Relationship nuclear war.
Right. When, you know, and when that happens, because I learned that lesson the hard way once, because I lovey-lovey and, oh, I can trust this person, and woo. And, you know, I told some stuff that, you know, I had done and stuff like that, or had happened to me. And of course, that was then thrown back into my face and used as ammunition. So there's just certain things, but it's just that episode, it floored me. And just make sure you have the smelling salt and the tissues, because it's, I don't know Agnes personally, but I know her character and I know what kind of person she is. And I know this is going, both of you guys, it's gonna affect your heart. So just be ready.
All right.
But the whole season, it has been amazing. I have some issues with it, but again, I can't talk about my issues with some of the stuff without revealing other stuff. So,
yeah.
I will say my
for afters
about for afterwards, and I'm just proud of you that you can hold out, because I couldn't have done this.
No, it's not.
Couldn't.
No, look, it's all a part of the overall meanness of me. I sat down to that boiled shrimp on Sunday, and
right.
I can't sit there and peel a shrimp and eat a shrimp, because then I'm back into the business of peeling again. I have to sit there and peel a bunch of shrimp so that I can just sit there and be happy with my plate of shrimp and my little bowl of cocktail sauce and get with it. It's the same thing. It's the same. In a former era, you know, you had to be there, sitting there, waiting on it to come on. Well, we've been freed from that, and so I can just sit there and binge my little heart out. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we'll have boiled shrimp at the same time. You never know. Let's see, you got a couple of notes here. Serving as the ad hoc horn research department, Ron in Raleigh tells us that Enron filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy on December the 2nd, 2001. So we've sorted out that factoid. Ron also says, we have a Sprouts here as well. Tell Tracy to look up a recipe for Coquille Saint-Jacques.
Okay.
You'll like it.
Cool.
And then a note from Scott in San Diego for dealing with family. If they bring Trump up in conversation, remind them that you're not spending X dollars a day for a lovely cruise of a lifetime to have the experience sullied by casual chat about President Toe Cheese. Should that tactic not dissuade them, pull out all the big guns and hit them with a Jedi mind trick. Inform them that when it comes to voters, there are more of us than there are of them in this country. And while it's true that a lot of us got caught napping in 2016, we won't be repeating that mistake in 2020. Scott, you'll recall, is an eternal optimist. Then remind them they can get a good sense of the feelings of the majority of the electorate from the 2018 midterms when the Democrats took back the House. Wind things up by reminding them that 2018 was only the beginning. In 2020, we'll be holding onto the House, retaking the Senate, and showing Trump the door. There's only one caveat in all of that. And it's just because of the, you know, I get notes occasionally from members of the Purity Patrol, where Scott says we won't be repeating that mistake in 2020. Well, in the last 24 hours, I've gotten a note from a member of the Purity Patrol who says that if he does not get his way and the nominee is not either Bernie or Tulsi, he absolutely refuses to do...
Bernie or who?
Bernie or Tulsi. You know...
Who the hell is Tulsi?
Tulsi Gabbard, the white lady who called out Kamala Harris in the last pageant and way before that went up and kissed Trump's ring before the inauguration.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but if the only way he will do the right thing is if Tulsi or Bernie are the nominee. Otherwise, the country can go ahead and hang fire.
These fucking people.
Meanwhile, you have a question. You got a note from Lady B. Ask Tracy if she wants me to set her aside a plate after she finishes her sermon, because that woman is preaching her ass off. Hallelujah.
I would happily take that tray, and I will make sure that I, you know, even if it's over my Weight Watchers points for the day, I have my weeklies that I very rarely dip into.
Yeah, you save those. Yeah. But I love that. Yeah. Does she want me to fix her a plate? That's, yeah.
Well, you you are proud of your hillbilly heritage just as I am proud of, and we have the same, you know, pretty much the same background when it comes to how we have been denigrated
No, make no mistake. From the hillbilly, no, we can't even touch.
No, you can't touch it, but you can empathize with it.
Sure.
You can see, and that is why
all marginalized communities have or should have a common bond of empathy. And
thank you.
One must always guard against it feeling like some sort of a competition. You know, who's been shit on more?
You know, which boots were heavier? The boots that guy was heavier on my neck than they were on your neck.
Right.
You know, no. It's like, it's the same boot, homie. It's just your neck. We have a common bond. We are a marginalized and oppressed people. You in Appalachia with them, you know, destroying your home for grief with mountaintop removal.
Or blowing up entire neighborhoods in Kentucky with, a poorly built pipeline. You know, that happened last week.
Right. See, the things that are going on in this country, you know, because like I got into it again, not so much because, you know, Reagan is the, you know, God Almighty, you know, of everybody. And of course, when people say shit to me about Reagan, and it's usually white people, I have two things to say about why fuck Reagan: crack cocaine and AIDS.
See, you got three. Kicking off his campaign within scant miles of where Schwerner and Cheney and Goodwin were buried after they were murdered by the Klan. Then the show.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you got to add that. You got to add number three in there. It was the biggest. It was the dog whistle heard around the world when he opened his 1980 presidential campaign in the home of the Klan.
That part.
And see, that's part of what I mean when I say that we dare not think that the troubles are just Trump. The troubles are Steve Scalise and Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Steve Cantaloupes King. And all
of those people.
Right. And Senate and House. And it's really difficult to kick them out. But Tracy, I got to get out of here because I got to get ready for my
lawyer.
You got
to go because you got to. But thank you for, you know, listening to my
semi soapbox slash rant slash sermon on
anytime, anytime. and I know Lady and I know Lady B will load up that plate.
Please do. Did anybody do anything towards the fundraiser?
Yes, I was going to announce that right here at the end. Big thanks to Melton for jumping in and answering the challenge. The challenge has been met. Thank you to Mike in Cascadia for jumping in. Thank you as well to Cynthia for being part of it. And what that means is we've gone from 580 down to 340. So that's huge.
Is that for the week, or is that just
until
now?
That's just up to now. It'll be 540 tomorrow. And this is, and like I said, this is going to be a month from hell. Maybe it's not. No, it's not. It's not hell because everybody's okay. But it's going to.
Everybody's okay.
Yeah, but it's going to. You know, well.
That part.
Yeah, it's just, you know, another day.
I have to listen to the show. So.
Yeah, it'll.
But anyway, love you much.
Thank you,
and
Tracy.
When I get myself together, because you know, I haven't really been working. I'm back, you know. But by next week, I should be back to my, you know, and you could definitely count on some, a little something from the wilds of Encino.
Well, thank you, dear. I appreciate it. You just keep work. You just keep working on being the awesome person you are.
Oh, see, this is why I love you, because see, this is why I need to, this, you know, somebody was talking about how many hugs a day people need to just to survive, and just how many hugs you need to survive, how many hugs you need to thrive. You're supposed to hug somebody, I think for survival, to survive is 8 hugs a day. But I think to be, you know, an amazing person, you need at least 12 or 14 hugs a day. So when I call in to the show, I consider this, you know, I consider a hug every like 15 minutes or so. So yeah. I'm pretty close to my hug quote.
Good. Good. Because that's the way this community is supposed to work, Tracy. You have yourself a lovely evening. Go out and burn up some of those spare points or something. Just be nice to Tracy tonight.
I'm going to eat something really stupid today. I was
clicking on one of those, you know, best sandwich in every state, the stupid things on the internet.
Right.
Yeah, West Virginia got handed a sausage and biscuit from Tudors. Oh my God. I have seen dogs turn up their noses at Tudors biscuits. But the best sandwich in California was said to be that French dip from the place that invented them in L.A. So it's on the damn list.
Yeah. Oh, that, like I said, where I went yesterday for the albondigas, that's on the list. Where I went the other day for, I have an ongoing list, and it's just a matter of how much time we have, and how long you're going to be here before, you know, because then I have to whittle down the list. So I'm making a list. So when we do make it out here, you know.
Yeah, that French dip, hot dog at Pink's, shrimp taco truck. It's all there. Hey, Tracy, you have a lovely evening, dear.
You too, my love. Talk to you soon.
Bye now.
Bye.
So, again, thanks to... thanks to everybody who did jump in and meet that challenge. That was powerful and tremendous. That took a bite out of Monday and a little chunk out of yesterday. So we will eventually catch up. Like I said, I got to knock off now. I'm a little bit overtime, but got to knock off because I'll be firing up the Malloy campfire here in about 50 minutes. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to our Steve in the chat room earlier this evening. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.